Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 29th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and we're in Vegas, baby!
We are in Vegas, probably losing our shirt.
Yeah, actually, we're technically not in Vegas right now. We're still in Florida. But by the time you're listening to this, we're in Vegas. So.
Unless, of course, you're listening to it from behind, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later,
yeah,
and then we're home again.
We could
but
be anywhere.
By this date, we're supposed to be... I'm flying home, and you're flying to New Mexico or whatever, right?
Albuquerque!
Mm-hmm.
Really hope I see Bugs Bunny there. Ever since I was a kid, I was a big Bugs Bunny fan. He's like, I took a wrong turn in Albuquerque. And I've never been to Albuquerque, so I wonder if how easy it is to take a wrong turn there.
Probably as easy it is to do it anywhere else.
Probably. Yeah. But yeah, we'll be in Vegas. But so we're recording early. And, you know, I'm kind of excited that we're recording early, even though I was making for a long day today. Because, you know, we usually go on these trips out of necessity, because we just don't have the time to do a proper show. We do the little 30-minute doohickey on the little recorder thing, right?
Right.
And I always feel like we're cheating the fans when we do that. But I know they understand, but I always feel like I'm cheating them. So doing it this way, they're getting a full show this week like they should, or sort of a full show. Full enough show. And then next week, we'll be back in the studio, and we can record a full show for the Vegas. So they're getting two full shows where they normally would get one half show.
See, I sometimes like the shows that we do from, because it sounds like, you know, we're just on the road and we're having fun and we're just whipping this together, and it shows our dedication to the show, and you know, to me, that those on the road ones, I mean, even what Poker Geek had said, you know, he saw all the enthusiasm in our voice when we were in the car driving across Oklahoma. It just was a fun show for them, the level of intensity. And so we're going to have to pick it up a notch today to try to acquire the level of intensity that we usually have when we're in the hotel room fighting the cockroaches for the soap.
All right, we'll try. Well, we're going to start by cleaning out the banner closet here.
This one's been in there a while.
Oh, my gosh. Our good friend Andy Epking, we love him a lot. He's a lot of fun at our home game, comes to a lot of our events here. And he sent this to us probably, what, about 7 years ago?
I think right before we're starting the show.
Yeah, it's been on our notes for a long time. We've always had something something better to put on there. But we're at the crust of the bottom of the barrel today. So
yeah, I'm gonna have a little fun with this at your expense, I think. So
yeah,
I can't wait.
I know you. That's the whole reason that I'm putting on here. It's because I know you're like, we should put that on there. But I knew you have a way to make me regret it. So, but no, I actually like this, and I know you're gonna make fun of me, so I'm probably not gonna like it when I'm done. But this is what Andy Up King. He sent us one of those dreaded email forwards, and you know, when I become supreme ruler of the world, you know, Admiral General. A couple things I'm going to do. One of them I'm going to do is eliminate the email forward to everybody in your address book.
Yeah.
Possibility.
Yeah.
That's going to become a capital punishment. I'll give Annie up King amnesty this one time. But this is one of those things that, you know, that you know, I'm not being an ageist here, but this is the kind of thing that my daddy emails me. Oh, my God, you're going to freak. You're going to flip out, Scott. This thing's awesome. And almost always it's something I've seen 100 times before, and I wasn't flipped out or thought it was awesome the first time, and I certainly am not now that dad caught up to it. But, you know, it's one of these email forwards. And because it came from Annie up King, it's about cards, I'm like, all right, I'll give it a try. Now, it's called the Italian card trick, and you pick a card from 6 possibilities. And then you scroll down in the email, and voila, Gino the dealer has magically removed it from the 6. Not convinced? trying to get into the different card. Wow, works again. So now I'm like, all right, am I having a weird day here? What's going on? This is not like, you know, a real life magic trick where, you know, they can hide the cards and stuff. This is an email forwarded from 100 old people to 100 other old people, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, I got to figure this out. So I look down, I'm like, aha! It's all an illusion. I think it isn't all magic except, you know, what that David Blaine guy does, right?
Right.
So it reminded me of similar to the scene in that movie Interstate 60 that we talked about last year or so. It plays on our minds a weakness for similarity rather than exactness. So first it tells you a card is missing, so now you're only looking for your own card, and when you don't see it, you're amazed! But bigger than that, it takes all the cards, makes them look similar, and ensures that you'll never see your card. So the Seven of Club on the first page becomes the Seven of Heart on the second. The Seven of Diamonds becomes the Six of Diamonds. So they're very subtle changes, but subtle enough to work on the surface. And so my takeout, before you make fun of me, is don't be too quick to make poker decisions, because what appears on the surface to be right might just be an illusion.
Yeah, it's actually, I think I saw this once as an app, too. It was like a, you know, I didn't, when you see it's an app for a card trick, you think they're going to teach you how to do a card trick with cards. So I got the app to see what it was. And then, of course, it was this thing where, and it's, they, I think they substitute black with black. So I think that if it was the Seven of Clubs on the first page, it'd be like the Seven of Spades or that's something to make you think nothing's changed, yet everything has changed.
And
first, I'm offended that it's the Italian card trick because the guy, the dealer's name is Gino. You know, I'm kind of offended by that. But moving on, I did think that it was interesting that pretty much now I want to start a new segment on the show called Have Scott Turn This Into Poker, and I'll come up with very random things, and you have to find a poker angle. Like, next week's topic will be oatmeal. Now you have a week to work on how Quaker Oats oatmeal pertains to poker. That's what I think that we need to do now for this show. So whenever we're desperate for banter, and you're going to like, Chris, banter's really... I'm going to say, all right, Scott, hat. Okay, there you go. Go with it. Run with it, buddy. Make it poker. That's what we're going to do, I think, from now on.
I think I can rise to that challenge, I believe.
I think we're going to try that. But no, I mean, it's interesting that you need to take a moment with this when you see it and figure it out. And it's the same in poker. You need to take a moment and just figure out what the best play is. Don't be knee-jerk. Think about it for a minute. Think, if I do this, what does it mean? And that's a very good poker lesson that you could take from this. If this happened, why did this happen? And same thing with the card trick. Why is my card missing? And yet I don't think it is missing. So someone's calling in right now to tell us the answer to that question. I can't wait to hear that answer. And before every show, we were like, hey, we got all the phones turned off? Yeah, everything's turned off. You got the ringers off? Yeah, I got the ringers off.
All right, well, see, since I'm making fun of old people, I'm going to admit that I'm an old person here. I don't know how to turn my home phone off. And I know most of our listeners are like, you have a home phone? Who still has a home phone?
I just unplug it. I pull the cord out of the back.
Yeah.
I do it every week.
Yeah, but then I probably forget, and then when the internet company calls to cancel my
burying of the
service
cord.
Tech thing, I'm not going to hear, so I apologize. But hey, we're having a lot of fun on this show because we just talked about a trick, and then we got phone calls coming in, we got words of the day, and we got riddles, so, you know, this is going to be a real mind-bender of a show, starting with why Scott can't learn how to unplug his phone. So.
Pretty much none of this will be poker today, but we'll try to make it all poker at some point.
I don't know about that. all right, well, hey, I appreciate Annie King sending that in, and I see more in it than my dear friend Chris does.
Yes. Yes, you're the kind of person that looks at the clouds and sees, like, you know, Darwin floating by when everyone else sees clouds.
Absolutely.
You're the optimist of this duo.
All right, so one of our other good friends, of course, is Gambit. He's our forum administrator, been a listener all the way back from that very first Bert and Ernie show 7 years ago. And he's become kind of a cult figure as well, too. Probably not on the same level as Faso, but up there.
Yeah.
You know, he's in the King's Court of our listeners. So when Jammin, I believe he's from Australia or New Zealand, I feel bad, I can't remember which, but, and I know they're completely different, I guess it's been about a month ago now, he stumbled upon, apparently he's very well-read listener to this jamming. He gets the words of the day from dictionary.com. So he's either very interested in adding to his vocabulary.
Yeah, building his vocabulary, right.
Or he's just trying to kick my ass at Words with Friends. One of those two, whichever reason. He gets the word of the day sent to him from dictionary.com. And the word of the day for Sunday, May 20th, 2012, was gambit.
Awesome.
Pronounced gambit. And it's a noun, and it's got three meanings. A remark made to open or direct a conversation. That I didn't know, to be honest.
Hmm.
Two, chess, which of course is where our gambit took his name from. An opening in which a player seeks to obtain some advantage by sacrificing a pawn or a piece. Or three, any maneuver by which one seeks to gain an advantage.
Yeah, sounds about right.
You didn't know what gambit meant. Now you know, and... I just thought it was interesting that you know, we just I'm waiting for the word of the day to be facile. See what that means.
One who throws cards at dealers. And so it was funny because the first definition was just a regular definition, but the second one it put chess in italics and then explained it. So I think number three should be poker, and then italicize with a period, and then say any maneuver by which one seeks to gain an advantage at the poker table. There you go.
Yeah. So we'll write to the folks at dictionary.com and
see if they add it.
I'll ask them whether anyone is one word or two words. Okay, so ongoing debate here at Andy at headquarters. All right, so last thing before we move on to the rest of the show, another longtime listener that likes to send us lots of fun stuff, David Bloomberg, sends us a riddle, and I know you got this pretty quickly. Of course, I didn't. But so what we're going to do, I'm just going to read the riddle. And we're not going to answer it, and we'll let readers respond. I can't promise a prize because when I do that, and no one responds, then the people call, why didn't you give them a prize? So let's just say we'll keep it open-ended. We may or may not give you a prize.
No. The prize is knowledge. Okay?
Knowledge?
That's the prize is knowledge, knowing that you got it right, or if you got it wrong, we're going to tell you the right answer, so you'll have learned something. That's the prize here. We're not just giving away everything because you figured out a riddle. Let's get this straight. Well, you call the hotline, we use it, you don't give me, we'll give you some. You email that. But this is knowledge.
This is knowledge. I like that. I like that a lot. All right, so he says, this following scenario happened to him in a World Series of Poker circuit satellite a couple weeks ago, and the dealer, who travels and deals all over the country, indicated that he probably only saw it occur once every few years. All right, here's a riddle. I was under the gun and pushed all in. I was called by one person. I lost the hand. Yet I ended up with the exact same chip stack I started with. How did it happen? All right, let us know. And it's not a subtle card change of 7.56. that much I know.
All right, our hotline, 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it. And if we never used it before, we'll give you something cool. But right now, this comes from Paul.
Hey, guys, this is Paul from South Carolina, the other poker wasteland in the South. Listening to the comments made by my neighbor to the north, in North Carolina, about free poker, and I've got a couple of suggestions. One is don't play on Zynga Poker. I think there's too big a database, just nobody, no one that can really play. But what I found is I play a lot on PokerStars.net, and I try to play the highest buy-ins I can, for instance, the 200,000 sit-and-goes, 80,000, 27-man sit-and-goes. And I find that at the high level, the players are all pretty good. You know, cream rises to the top.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that once you get up to the... Because, you know, those plate chips have value.
Mm.
You know, not a lot of value, but, you know, people buy and sell them and stuff. So.
Plus the time. There's time that you've put in to get those chips, so...
Yeah, you're right. I think people think in poker that when you're playing for something of value, it's always money.
Yeah.
But it's not always money. Sometimes it's particularly in a tournament, I think it's time you've invested and stuff. So as long as something of value is on the line, and you're right here, I've spent 3 years building up my Stars play money to this high level now, and if I lose it all in his hand, then that 3 years is wasted.
Yeah.
And now you start to play a little bit better, right?
I remember the guy that kept pestering me on pokerroom.com.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to buy my chips, and I'm like, dude, put the money in my account, I'll give you the chips. And he's like, no, put the chips in my account, I'll give you the money. And we went back and forth for like an hour.
We'll stand off. Yep.
I was like, I know I know you're not going to really pay me for this, so I'm not doing it until you give me the money. And it was funny. But yeah, there was value to this guy. He wanted to have a bunch of play chips for some reason. He wanted to, you know, I don't know, intimidate other people at the play chip tables. I don't know what it was, but he was willing to give me $100 for like a million chips. I'm like, give me the $100 right now. And he didn't do it.
and a quick side to this too, because of this obviously Paul Call was about us talking about play money, and Blasman actually made a return to our forum this week.
Yeah.
And mentioned that you know, playing for free poker has made him super aggressive because he just doesn't care.
Right. Right.
I'm not sure that's the best lesson to take out of it, but that's a good point that you know, when you don't feel that knot in your stomach about losing, you start playing more aggressively. Now, the question is, can you take those lessons, even though you don't really care, and learn what aggression means so you can apply it properly when you do have that pit in your stomach later on? If you could do that, then I think you are picking up some valuable stuff from the play money games.
Yeah, and it'll embolden you, but at the same time, don't make the mistake that like my wife makes when I was fooling around with play money and I had like a million chips in front of me, and she's like, why can't you just do that with real money then? Why don't you just take $1,000? And I'm like, all right, well, here's the deal, hon, because, yeah, you might be aggressive and you might be winning pots and stuff, but you're also winning them from people who don't care at all and are calling with anything, and that's why you're making all this money. If it was really $1 million on the table, they wouldn't be going all in with deuce seven off because they thought it was funny. You know, so you have to always make sure you keep that, you keep your feet on the ground when you're playing for play money.
But keep shooting for
the poker stars.
All right, Paul, you've had some swag here recently, so nothing for you, but everybody else, if you haven't had swag within a year, please call the hotline 813-448-1120 or email us at podcast@aniamagazine.com, and we'll give you a wonderful, wonderful, fantastic prize. Like we're going to give Chris Littlejohn here.
Yeah, Chris Littlejohn writes in, says, your podcast makes Friday's vending route a lot more bearable. I really enjoy the podcast. You guys are funny. Oh, thanks. If you could, I'd love some tips for strengthening my game. I've read several books and play regularly live/online in small stakes, MTTs, and singos. My reading list so far is Theory of Poker, Advanced Concepts, Every Hand Revealed, Play Better Poker, and Odds and Probabilities. Filling vending machines for a living kind of limits my ability to pay for coaching, but that is something I've considered. Anything you would suggest would be much appreciated. Well, first of all, if you're reading those books and understanding them, you're way smarter than I am, and anything I have to say probably won't work. So
exactly. That's an impressive reading list there.
I mean, I've read Theory of Poker because Scott had it and didn't know what to do with it, so I said, well, let me try, and I didn't know what to do with it. Every Hint Revealed is interesting. I didn't ever read that, but Fasso didn't write a review of it. These other books, you know, those are hard books to get. To understand and to apply. So if you can, you're on the right path already, man. I gotta tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, he's talking about paying for coaching, and you know, this is a tough decision, I think, because unfortunately, I think some people have abused the market out there.
Yeah.
And you know, because when you ask people, I mean, this is always my question before we actually got involved with the magazine, you know. You know, we went to like the WSOP Academy or something like that. It was like $1,500 or something.
Right.
And you ask those folks, you know, how do you, when people say that they can't afford it, what do you say? They're like, you can't afford not to afford it.
Yeah.
You're going to make that money back in one session. All right. Now, I get the point they're making, but at the same time, you have to be able to, there has to be good value for that money. Now, the market's changed now. I don't think anybody charges $1,500 for these things now. But, you know, for a good one pro group session, it's about $500 for a couple hours now. So that's, you know, that's still a good chunk of change. No pun intended, Chris. So I think the big thing is knowing going in that you're going to get the value, and that's really tough. That's a tough thing to convince somebody that, you know, hey, this $500 you're giving me for these next 2 hours, you are going to become a good player in just those 2 hours and go out and make that money back. You know, it's a – oh, my gosh.
See, someone disagrees with you. We'll see what they
absolutely
have to say.
They're like, no, Scott! Probably Lee Childs. You're killing my business, buddy. But, you know, I don't know if I could pull the trigger on it myself. Though, I will say this, and not just because he's a good friend and he's on our cruises, but, you know, I am in awe of Lee Childs when I watch him teach even the free classes he does on a cruise. Now, I haven't sat in on any of his advanced classes, so I assume they're even much better than that. But I know this. At some point, whenever I give my money to someone to teach me to play poker, it's going to be him. Mm-hmm. Because I like the way he teaches. And I think that's the big thing, too. I mean, you know, we talked about this before, too. There's a lot of people that are really good poker players. There's not a lot of good people that can teach the game. And they don't necessarily have to be really good poker players. They have to be good teachers. But you have to walk out of that room after 2 hours feeling like you learned something. And I would rather learn from somebody that can teach me than somebody that's probably a better player. If I can find somebody that's a really good player and a good teacher, that's even better. But it is a leap of faith, Chris. I understand that. So,
one of the things that I'd like to add then is that if you play in a multi-table tournament, and let's say it's a $150 tournament, and you get knocked out in 20 minutes, what did you learn? You didn't learn anything. You went and played in the tournament hoping to make money, and you were there for 20 minutes to an hour. Even if you're there 2 hours and got knocked out and didn't make a dime. Well, let's say you did that two times. Well, I'm sure for $300, you can get somebody to teach you that you trust, whether it's, I don't know what Lee charges, but let's say it was $300 to $500 or something for a couple hours. To me, that's how I would look at it. If I'm willing to invest money, if I'm thinking about investing money in coaching, I'm just going to look at it like, I'm just not going to play in a tournament this week, yet I'm still paying the same amount of money and I'm learning from someone who's proven that they can do it. And it's 2 hours solid of poker knowledge being told to me, whereas if I'm playing poker for 2 hours, I'm literally folding. If I'm playing 10% of my hands, or if I'm playing 15% of my hands and I get 30 hands an hour, you know what I mean? I'm playing like 10 hands for those 2 hours. Well, what are you going to learn with 10 hands, especially if you got knocked out? So here, that's what I would do. I would say, I'm going to sacrifice my tournament buy-ins for the next month, not play tournament buy-ins, and maybe read books for that month or play a couple home games or something, but take that money and invest it in a coach that you trust or that you want to hook up with, that you can afford, that you know will be teaching you solid for 2 hours straight, and that's the same thing. And now you've gotten that knowledge. So whether you get that money back or not, it's the same as entering a tournament. You're not getting that money back either if you lost in a tournament. So that's how I look at it. But I'd learn a lot more from somebody than I would learn from playing 15 hands in 2 hours and then going home. So
very true. And I will say another cheap thing, or inexpensive. Mm. Well, I say cheap. You know, obviously, I don't know if Chris is active on our forums, and it doesn't have to be our forums, but I particularly like our forums because it's a little more civil. But, you know, these forums are great. I mean, really, I think what people learn a lot from is just being able to bounce ideas off each other. Yeah. Now, obviously, on some forums, there's bad information. I mean, anytime I'm chiming in, obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, as long as you take that as learning and having that backup. You know, there's been a couple really good posts lately from folks that say, you know, hey, I really appreciate having this forum and being able to share ideas with folks. And, you know, you don't have to learn from pros. You can learn a lot from just talking to every other average players about how they play.
Yep.
And that doesn't cost you a dime. It just takes some time.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, if you start to realize that the people you're talking with, maybe you know a little more than they do, it doesn't matter. When we talk to these students, or these teachers, I mean, and we say, hey, you know, what's it like to be teaching on this level? They always inevitably tell us it always helps them because it just reinforces what they already know, and it keeps it into the front of their consciousness when they're playing. It's not something that is beneath them and they're just regurgitating it and not thinking mindlessly about it. No, by teaching you, they're telling you that what they already know because it's solid principles that they're teaching, because those are the principles they use. So even if you're talking to somebody who may not know poker as well as you, when you're sharing those concepts with them, you're therefore continuing the learning process and making your own knowledge that much more strong and to the surface when you're playing. So even if you find yourself in forums that might not be as advanced as what you're doing, that's okay. And then the better you get, the better players you'll be playing with, and then they'll be teaching you. So it's really just a give and take throughout, no matter what level you're on.
Absolutely. All right, Chris, we appreciate the letter. Hopefully you learned something and continue to improve your game. And we're going to help you by sending you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which those hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. And once again, remind you to email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Okay, Lee in Ohio sends in a call to Floor. Says he's a big fan of the podcast, the mag, and the forum. That's the triumvirate there. The
I love when they call it the mag. It makes me feel like I'm hip.
The trifecta of Anti-Up Nation. He says, we're playing in a 25-person home multi-table tournament that pays three spots. We're down to the top five, and I'm third in chips, and the blinds are 30-minute levels using an iPhone app to count down. The homeowner had been knocked out early and was watching the action, grabbed the iPhone, and hit the button that made the levels 15 minutes without telling anyone. I noticed that the levels jumped and knew that the tourney had just turned into a turbo for the remainder. I'd never seen this happen before, and it completely changed my thought process. Question 1, do I say something about the increase? Question 2, no other player noticed, do I become more aggressive and less or less, knowing that the time had just decreased? The big stack had been raising, I made a stand and was knocked out of the money. Wonder if I should have been more patient. The game was over before I made it home, 1.5 hours earlier than usual.
All right. Well, we didn't really have a call of floor this week. We have a couple interesting ones that Jody's chewing on. So I thought this one kind of qualified, and since it's a mix of etiquette and strategy that we're going to talk about it here, Lee. So I would say from the etiquette, which we could start with, I think you absolutely need to say something.
Sure.
You know, it's again we talk about that rule 16 or whatever it was at the Boulder Vaz that you know if you know of something that's wrong, it's your responsibility as a player to alert someone and let them know. And certainly in this case, I mean, I think as soon as she saw that happen, you need to say, hey, you probably did do it on purpose, Joe, but I think you changed it to 15 minutes. And then we try to, I imagine, I don't have an iPhone, but I imagine you just push another button and turns it into 30, right? And then you don't have to worry about this dilemma. So that's what I'm going to say about that, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we always talk about the players need to say the blinds went up to the dealers if the dealer doesn't see it, and the dealer needs to tell the floor manager didn't see it or whatever. So you're all responsible for whatever it is that's going on. So I would have said something immediately and said, oh my God, we're playing 15 minutes now? When did that happen? Why are we doing that? And then that would at least start a discussion to say, hey, we're going to keep it that way, or whoops, I made a mistake, it should be 30. But then on to your strategy about what do you do now that it's shorter time, I'm not sure, is he asking that because no one else noticed he shouldn't or should change?
He's essentially saying, hey, I've got information that no one else has. And for whatever reason, I'm not telling them. So I want to be able to exploit this. So does this mean I become more aggressive or less aggressive? Because I know the levels are 15 minutes when everybody else thinks they're 30.
Well, knowing that you have less time to play, I think I'd become more aggressive because the blinds are going to keep going up and your stack is going to be quickly become obsolete. Yeah. So I think I'd be more aggressive. And then you might get calls from people that don't realize that you're being aggressive and... You know, who knows? But the other thing, though, is if you're asking these in the order, do I say something about the increase? Yes. So at that point, it doesn't matter.
So that's why I said, you know, maybe you just, hey, I'm not sure, should I say something? I'm going to email Chris and Scott, and of course, you know, we don't answer right away.
They're still in the tournament right now waiting for our response.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm waiting for him to write me back to let me know what I should do. I need to know what I should do while I'm waiting. Good, like Christmas vacation. Give me somebody. Give me somebody while I'm waiting.
Well, so I really think then I would have increased my aggressiveness just because I know that my stack is going to be dwindling pretty soon. And
but you have to, right?
Blinds are going up. I think so.
Yeah, I mean, when the blinds are... I mean, any tournament, the smaller the blinds, the more aggressive you have to be. That doesn't mean you have to be crazy, but you have to be more aggressive. If you have two-hour levels, then you don't have to be anywhere near as aggressive as if you have 20-minute levels. So
right.
Now the level is just chopped in half, so you got to be twice as aggressive, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty sound.
All right, well, Lee, we appreciate you sending that in, and we're going to help you make an impression at your next home game. particularly people in your home game are listening to this, by sending you a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Antiup. Everyone else, pick up your own decks of J-Design playing cards in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Well, it's probably too late for you to vote for us, because we probably won't be posting the show until the deadline, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. But you can still take our survey as our annual fan survey at antiupmagazine.com/survey. This way you have a chance at winning thousands of dollars of great prizes, including the grand prize, which is a one-hour lesson and lunch with Chris Moneymaker.
And that survey is open through August 1st, so plenty of time to do it. But don't wait till the last minute.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Christmas shopping.
Wait till the last minute, you're going to forget, because, just, you know, we're probably not going to remind you every week.
Yeah.
Because we're just not that type of people, so you just might forget. So go ahead and do it right now. And while you're hanging out on our website, why don't you turn your cursor over to antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors and apply to become one of our great, fantastic ambassadors around the country. Looking for somebody in the Reno area and also maybe up in Deadwood in South Dakota. But just because we're not looking for somebody in an area doesn't mean that you shouldn't apply for some other area, because you never know when folks move on to bigger, better things and we need to replace them. So
that's happened a handful of times. Happened a handful of times already, so make sure
it's
really
easiest for us. Yeah. Right, it's always easiest for us to go back and say, hey, we already got somebody as backup here. So,
And then don't forget our cruise schedule is at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. August 27th out of Port Canaveral. Got over 200 people for that one. They still have giveaways at Palm Beach Kennel Club, Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood, Tampa Downs, Ebro Greyhound Park, and there's a way for you to upload a video to Blue Shark Optics to win one as well. And then, of course, November 10th out of Baltimore, they're having giveaways at Dover Downs.
All right, no Antiup News Desk this week because we are recording in advance, and as smart and professional journalists as we are, we can't predict the news, right?
No, I'm going to guess that Phil Abbey wins a bracelet between now and then, though.
He has been hot, yeah. Has he not? Or at least he has been hot as of when we're recording now. Yeah. He probably has 7 bracelets now. But yeah, definitely visit antiupmagazine.com for your news updates until we return the news desk next week.
But now we get to begin a brand new O'Malley's Move. So here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at an 8-handed, 1-2 PLO8 game. The table is fairly passive pre-flop, but can get aggressive after the flop. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, under-the-gun plus 1 and 2 fold, the MP calls, and we're in the cutoff with the ace of spades, king of diamonds, 8 of clubs, 3 of spades. We have 2 suited wheel cards, as well as 2 Broadway cards, but we don't like the dangling offsuit 8. We're just going to call the big blind. The under the gun has roughly 640 to our 400, but we've got the MP outchipped by about 140. Additionally, the under the gun is probably the best player at this table, besides us. He can be crafty and plays his hands very well post-flop. The small blind calls, and the big blind checks. They each have about the same chip stack that we do. The pot is $10, and we see a flop of the king of hearts, 4 of spades, deuce of spades. We flopped the world here. We couldn't ask for a better situation. We've got top pair, a steel wheel, and nut flush draw, as well as position. The blinds check, and the under the gun wastes no time in putting in a bet of $10, the size of the pot. The MP calls, and we know we have to raise here. We've got a huge draw and top, for what it's worth. But in 08, you've got to bet your draws when you have them. We make it $40 to go. Both blinds get out of the way, and the under the gun fiddles with his chips. At first, he counts out a raise, but then he just puts in a call. The MP calls as well. The pot is at 130, and the turn is the Jack of Hearts. As far as we're concerned, this is a brick. But this time, the under-the-gun checks, as does the MP. It looks like our raise on the flop has given us control of the hand. We decide to keep up the aggression, knowing full well we really have nothing so far except for one pair. we make it $75 to go. This time, the under the gun really appears to be calculating the pot and trying to get a read on us. We're screaming in our minds for him to fold, but after a long while of thinking about it, he makes the call. Finally, the MP folds. The pot is at 280, and the turn is the horrendous 10 of hearts. However, the under the gun once again checks to us. We have just $3 more than what's in the pot, while our opponent has over $500. What do we do?
This week we're wrapping up my what's been affectionately called the Long North American Poker Tour by El Snarfo. All this traveling I've been doing. Last week we talked about South Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. This week I'll fill you in on the places I stopped in Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, and Kansas. And I forgot to mention this last week's show, but I will this week. I didn't visit all the rooms.
Right.
As we usually do. I mean, when we travel, we can only hit so many places. So definitely check out our Where to Play pages on our website for a complete list of other places you can play. But this week we're going to start with Kansas, where I started my trip to see Van Halen. Not a very good show, by the way, too. I know you're not surprised. But when I was in Kansas, they have three rooms there now. And managers have told me there that that area has never been able to support three poker rooms in the past. They always try, and one ends up closing. It doesn't happen to be the new one. Sometimes it's one of the older ones. So I think a lot of eyes right now are on what Hollywood Kansas Speedway is going to mean for the market and whether finally they can support three poker rooms there or whether one of them will bite the dust. Hopefully for all these managers that won't happen because they're all nice folks. But Hollywood Kansas Speedway is the new kid on the block. It just opened recently. Absolutely gorgeous. I was really impressed with how it looked on the inside. It's actually in the west side of town, and it's actually in Kansas. I always loved this. You know, I was growing up, Kansas City's in Missouri. Doesn't make any sense to me. But there's the Kansas City, Kansas, and that's where it is. And the poker room is on it's on its own room off to the side of the casino. So it's one of those hybrid things.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's you don't have to wade through slot machines to get there, but you can still hear them. It's their own area. But word is they've taken all the high limit action there since they've opened. That's gravitated from some of the other rooms. And I also understand that that part of the region is a little more well-heeled, so those folks don't have to drive their Corvettes as far to wager anymore, which kind of makes sense. But it's a real nice room, absolutely, so I certainly understand why people want to play there. The two older rooms, and by older I mean just older, not any less special, are Harrah's North Kansas City and Maristar Kansas City, both very close to each other on the east side of town in Missouri. Harrah's, of course, is a World Series branded room, and it was real busy when I was visiting there. And Ameristar also is a very nice sized room. It's up on the second floor, so really kind of set away but convenient. I really like that kind of setting very well. And they are talking about trying to do some kind of tournament series there pretty soon. So if folks are looking for big tournaments, I think that's where they're going to look for them in Kansas.
Cool.
From there, I drove up through Iowa to Horseshoe Council Bluffs, by far the biggest room in Iowa. It's just across the river from Omaha, so it gets all the Nebraska play. It gets a lot of the play in Iowa right around there. You know, the state, it's a bigger state than it looks. It takes a while to get across it. And they have, I think, probably the proper amount of poker rooms. But what's been happening in the state, and all the managers told me this, is you know, once a new room opens somewhere else, then the room tapers off a little bit. So they're spreading the market out a lot there. So I think you get a lot of five-table room action now, where, you know, probably before a couple of these rooms opened, everybody was having 10. But Council Bluffs is very busy. Of course, they get that big Omaha crowd. And they do really well for the circuit stop there.
By Omaha, you mean the town, not the game.
Yeah, it's true. Omaha, Nebraska, yes.
Right.
Warren Buffett, the College World Series, and Omaha Steaks.
Okay.
I think that's about all I know from there, right? From there, we drove up to Grand Falls Resort, one of the absolute nicest hotel rooms I've ever stayed in. This place is about a year old, I think. Very modern, too. It has one of those kind of like... showers, it doesn't really close. You know, some people don't like that, but, you know, you just kind of step in. You don't have any door or a curtain or anything, which is kind of cool. But it's a very modern room. Newest place. It's been about, like I said, open about a year. Poker Room is an 8-table room. It's his own room. It's, again, connected, but off to the side of the casino. And they'll be having one of those Mid-States poker events in August. I didn't get a chance to meet with the manager there, but I had a couple of phone calls with him, and very... very aggressive, eager guy. And I think he's going to do some good stuff there. At the tail end of my trip, I came back through the other side of Iowa and stopped at Iowa Bettendorf. It's part of the Quad Cities right in the Illinois border. And I do know all four of the Quad Cities now, but don't ask me because I think I just forgot it in that minute. But it's a small 4-table room. But what I like about these rooms is this room particularly, but rooms that do this in general, they do a theme game each night. So when I was there, it was Omaha. Cool. But they do other games every night. So, you know, when you have a small room, it's tough to get those people in and get those games going. But if you tell everybody, hey, come here at 7 o'clock on Thursday, and we're going to play Omaha, that helps get those games going. And I think that's a proactive thing for managers to do. Very nice hotel, too, and very, very reasonable, too. I mean, that's always a good thing when you're staying at casinos. Very nice. From there, I moved on to the Riverside Resort, which is owned by the same folks that opened the Grand Falls. Both of those properties are very stylish. Poker Room's a little bit larger than Grand Falls. Again, they did one of these things where they opened a room based on demand then, and then they had some competition, got a little smaller, so when they built Grand Falls, they purposely downsized that room so they didn't have some extra tables. Right. But they'll be looking to do some tournaments as well, too. From there, we moved to the Meskwaki, my favorite name of all of them. It's near Cedar Falls. It's a very large room. They just hired a new manager who is really looking to do a lot of different stuff, real creative, so I'm looking forward to see what he comes up with. And they had a real successful Mid-States Poker Tour event there, too, and I think they're planning another one here coming up pretty soon. Actually, I think four more over the next couple of years. So. And then my trip through Iowa stopped at Prairie Meadows. It's the closest room to Des Moines, the capital. So if you're looking to go to Iowa for a poker tour, you're going to want to fly into Des Moines and drive from there. The hotel just completed a major renovation. Super, super stylish. Very nice. And they're going to take that whole theme to the entire casino here pretty soon. So it's going to be some construction coming up. But it's going to look really, really nice when it's done. And in fact, it looks really good right now. So it's only going to even look better. Poker is on the second floor in its own room, tucked away from the main casino, which is really cool, very convenient to get to, and you don't get the slot machine ding. I had a good variety of games when I was there, and their next big event is a Heartland Poker Tour event in September. All right, Chicagoland. I always like going to Chicago for lots of reasons, Wrigley, and I get to hang out with Chicago Joe, one of the all-time awesome dudes out there. I called him. He gave me the white glove tour. He actually drove around all these properties with me.
Jeez.
And gave me the history of it all. Joe was just excited about everything, and I love that. You know, his enthusiasm is just infectious.
Yep.
And folks may not know this, but Chicago doesn't have its own poker room. They have some charity events up there. But so all the casinos are south in Indiana or to the west in other parts of Illinois. Obviously, the big one everybody knows about, Horseshoe Hammond. You and I have been there before, I think, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And that's where we almost don't roll it.
Almost died.
Almost died. Still as gorgeous as it was the first time. Lots of tables, high brush area, private room with even more tables. Very comfortable place to play. They do very well for their circuit event there. And they have another big event called the Chicago Poker Classic once a year. So very, very, very nice room there. From there with the Majestic Star, poker room is self-contained on the top floor, lots of tables. Now, these are kind of, this is one of those riverboat things. And the riverboats are always interesting because they almost never have enough room for poker because, you know, you're trying to maximize your profits. But I think they do well by poker there with a very big room. Very nice, lots of natural light coming in, which I like. And they just finished a Heartland event there and are strategizing for the future on whether to do that or something else. But I was impressed with Majestic Star. From there, we drove up to Harris Joliet. It's a small new room. They just carved it out of the existing space. The manager there is a guy. really building that property up correctly. He does a weekly poker league there and is active with lots of other promotions. And when they told him, hey, we're going to open a poker room, where do you want to put it in the casino? You can put it anywhere you want. He put it near the bathrooms and the cage.
Smart.
Two most important things, he says, for poker players. And I think it works out well. And they do have room to expand eventually, so they're going to see how it goes. They might be able to take some other things and make that room bigger. But right now, very nice, well-run small room. From there, we head up to Hollywood Aurora. It's my last stop in Illinois. It just consolidated its rooms. It had a smaller actual cash game room, and then they did some of their tournaments elsewhere in the casino near the blackjack pit. Now they put it all together in one place. Made it a much bigger room. They're going to continue some renovations throughout the summer to get that Hollywood theme. But most interesting is I believe this is the first poker room in Illinois, as Chicago Joe would say. But they are a huge limit house. They always have a 10-20 game going, always, never shuts down. Mm-hmm. Often a 20-40, and they often have more than one 10-20. And those are hard to find now, I think, outside of, like, Vegas and California, for steady limit games. But
yeah.
They get them going there. And it's going to be a place that is going to get a lot more attention, I think, once they finish these renovations. Now, of course, the highlight of all these trips are the meetups, and particularly in Chicago. You even got the post a picture of us on Facebook with Chicago Joe, Chicago Jason, Chicago Brian, Chicago Mike, and Brent. One of our newest columnists, real smart guy, Brent White. And, yep. I just don't think he's been around long enough to be called Chicago Brent yet. But everybody else is his nickname Chicago there. So we got a 4-8 horse game started that quickly morphed into a 7-game mix. We added No Limit Hold'em and Pot Limit Omaha. I tried to get that triple draw in there, but they told us they weren't allowed to deal draw games yet. So we had to settle for the 7-game mix. But that was really cool. I don't think we've done a meetup with a 7-game mix before. I think we've done, obviously, that Binion's one that you were at. We did some crazy stuff. But this was like a dedicated 7-game mix. They had to bring the little placards over and everything for us. As soon as we put it up on the board, we had a couple of the regular patrons sit down and join us. And absolutely had some fun with one guy. He was the nicest guy ever. He was just having a blast playing with us. And then when we finished the stud 8 and we switched it to No Limit Hold'em, he's like, whoa, hey, what's going on here? And he's like, how come no one told me when I sat down we're going to play No Limit Hold'em? And he got really heated. And we were like, hey, we're sorry. When we sat down, we put 4-8 on the board, but when we sat down, we just discussed it. You know, with the people here, and we decided that's what to go with. And I think they changed the board after that to just say mixed. And so we got hot, and I've had so much fun playing with you guys. You guys were so much better than the 3-6 crowd, but I'm not going to play No Limit. I'm going to get up. And he left and cashed out and went to play 3-6.
Why couldn't he just sit out for the round?
That's exactly what we said. We're like, Chicago Jason was cracking me up. He's like, I don't know what this guy is. Like, I like playing with you guys, and I don't like playing with those people. But I'm going to leave playing with you guys to go play with those people. Is that what just happened?
Jeez.
And I'm like, yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, one of the other guys that wasn't one of the anti-uppers, he just sat out for, I don't know if it was Rad, or maybe sat out for the No Limit PLO, got lunch and dinner or whatever, he came back. And, you know, folks, 7-game mix, let's not get hot here. You know, just sit out for a couple hands. I mean, we were playing just, I think we were playing with 8 hands of each or something. You know, it's a little lammers, so it's not that big a deal. Particularly if No Limit Hold'em and PLO, those go pretty quick.
Yeah.
But always have a good time with the meetups there, and looking forward to going back to Chicago. But love that good loyal group of fans we have out there. Always good to see them.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
No one told me we're going to be doing Omaha.
That's exactly my thought. We're doing Omaha this week?
I'm leaving. I'm going to do a 3-6 limit hold'em hand of the week instead. this week's comes from Matty H. From down under there in Australia. And he says, I was playing an Omaha session online and came up with the following as a good reason to A, always read your hand properly, and B, adjust your opponents. Two solid things, I think, right?
Sure.
I do believe that I played the hand pretty poorly. However, I'm interested to hear your thoughts nonetheless. So good. So he's given us a green light, even a flashing green light, to pile on him here. So, all right. So he says the setup is I've been sitting at the Omaha 1 cent, 2 cent table on PokerStars for about 15 minutes, and of course he's actually playing for pennies and not fake pennies.
Hey, is this PLO or limit high? Or is it
PLO? It is PLO.
It's PLO. Okay.
I don't believe it's A because he doesn't say that, but it is PLO.
Okay.
All right. So we've been playing for around 15 minutes. They're four-handed, two stacks with over 100 big blinds behind, and our hero has them both covered with 490 big blinds. That's all playing pennies.
So he has $4.90.
Yeah, he's got an Abe Lincoln on the table there, but he's massively deep stacked.
Right? Oh, wait, their big blinds are 2 cents? So he's got like five...
So six, probably $10. Right?
He's got like $10, okay.
He's got a Hamilton.
Okay.
Or two of Abe's. all right, play has been very loose, somewhat passive. No one other than me has been pushy pre-flop, and thus we're lucky to see more than a raise and small re-raise pre-flop. All right, so the under the gun raises the pot 7 cents. The button min raises to 12 cents. And we're in the small blind with ace of clubs, tray of hearts, six of spades, seven of spades. And this is definitely Omaha High, because I remember when I wrote him back, I analyzed his Omaha 8. So definitely Omaha High here. Ace of hearts, tray of clubs, six of spades, seven of spades. We're facing a pot and then a raise.
Fold.
Pretty easy, right?
Easy fold. Easy fold. You don't even have a nut draw with anything here except for a straight flush draw on spades if you're lucky enough to get it. Plus, the betting could be opened up again by the end of the gun if you just called. You're not going to four bet this with this horrible, horrible hand, so you would just call or fold, and if you called, the end of the gun could now, who had easily could have ace-ace double suited or something, could now pop it again, and now you've called a raise and a re-raise with crap, and you have to get out of it. I'm folding this hand twice if I can.
That'd be great to put him in the muck. Hey, can I have my cards back?
Yeah, I want to muck again.
I want to be sure. Can you put it at the bottom of the muck? I want to be sure there's no way that I can actually
get
sucked back into this hand.
Shuffle the muck when you put them in there, too. Will you? Shuffle up, because I don't even want to get a chance of getting those four cards ever again.
There's some lighter fluid. Just turn that old deck on fire and just burn those cards.
But really, you wouldn't play this hand for a raise and a re-raise, would you?
No, of course not.
No way.
You know, the only thing in my mind is it's four-handed and need to loosen up a little bit, but this is not one of those opportunities. So, no. Now our hero agrees. He says, normally this is a straight fold, being out of position with not much, probably leaving less than not much.
Yeah.
However, Chris, he starts to think, oh, he's dangerous, and comes up with, both players have been very loose and not pushy pre-flop. Two, the button raise is only the minimum, so he is unlikely to have much. Three, the structure of my four cards means that any real straight or straight draw I will have will most likely be strong, since the gaps are at the bottom. Four, the call represents less than 3% of my stack and will not be risking much to see a flop. Whatever number I'm on now. I have a good fold value, as most flops that miss my hand will give me nothing at all. And finally, the fact I have misread the ace as a suited ace.
Well, that's the thing. The suited ace maybe does change it a little bit. And if we were last to act and closing the betting, that'd be helpful, but we aren't. And I don't care what has happened in the past. When an under-the-gun raiser raises and then gets re-raised, he could be thinking, oh my God, I've got somebody on the hook with a worse hand than me. Now I'm going to really pop it and make him pay and maybe even get it all in somehow with my aces. You know, you don't know if that could easily be part of his thought process. Just a call here can get you screwed. So I just, even if it was a suited ace, I might even let it go, because really, you only have one nut draw there then, if it was suited. Everything else is weak kickers, and I'm getting out of the way with this hand no matter what.
Absolutely. All right, so, but obviously it wouldn't be a hand of weak if we folded here. So our hero does call.
One of these weeks you're going to be like, yeah, he did fold. That's the end of the hand. I have a feeling that's going to happen.
I got to take a whiz. all right, so he does call, wanting to see what the big blind undergun do. The big blind folds. Under the gun calls, making the pot 38 cents. And so we are seeing a flop three-handed with 38 smackers and a pot.
Okay.
Flop comes the tray of diamonds, six of diamonds, jack of hearts, and we are first with, what do we have here? Two pair, right?
Bottom two pair.
Bottom two pair. Always wonderful in Omaha.
Yep, we got straight draws, flush draws, overcards, bottom two pair. Jeez. See, why do I always get put in these positions? Well, the problem is that if I really think in PLO the real action happens on the turn. So no matter what happens here, you're going to get a call. No matter what you do, you're going to get a call.
Yep.
Absolutely. So if I'm going to get a call, why bet? I might as well just check and see what they're going to do and see if I want to call for that or maybe raise after that, not believing them. But easily, you could still be behind and have no even chance of winning with jack-jack in someone's hand other than 6-6 or 3-3 as runners. So I don't like betting here just because I think the turn is where you're going to be able to really buy this pot or do whatever you need to do to win it. So I'll check.
Yeah, we have the weakest of the made hands in Omaha. You know, I don't consider a pair a made hand in Omaha.
Right.
And bottom two pair is so dangerous in Hold'em. In Omaha, it's almost suicidal.
Yeah.
You know, and particularly, I mean, we don't have a lot of backup here. And, you know, if we improve to a boat, we probably haven't improved. We probably hurt ourselves. We got a little frisky getting this thing. We're hoping to hit hard. We didn't hit hard. I'm done with this hand.
Yeah, somebody wrote us this week. A button girl wrote us asking about under fulls.
Yeah.
And it sounds like wonderful, but it's not. And you really want to avoid these situations. And I think there's a chapter by Lyle Berman in the Super System 2 that talks about under fulls. And they're really just, they're just trap hands. And so even if you did fill up to a full house, you could still be staring at jacks full and lose your whole stack. So... I'm just checking here and seeing what they do.
Yeah, the only thing that's really interesting about this hand is that we're four-handed. But even though it's four-handed, people still have hands. I don't think my bottom two pair has risen in value dramatically enough for me to get excited about it.
Nope. Right. No, I mean, look at it this way. What kind of hands raise and then re-raise in this game? Aces, kings, ace, king, queen, jack. You know what I mean? You're looking at top pair, top kicker at the very minimum with these guys, and the next card that peels off is going to give them a better two pair, likely, if it's anywhere in the Broadway vicinity. And even if it's not, you still don't know what that orphan in their hand could be pairing, and you're asking for so much trouble here.
Yeah. And you got two streets to dodge diamonds as well, too.
Yep, and straights. It's possible somebody has a 4-5 in their hand or something of that nature, so you're really just asking for trouble here. I'm checking. You checking?
I'm checking.
All right.
And so is our hero.
Oh, good.
As does the under the gun, the button bets 20 cents, and it's back to us. We don't have to belabor this, right? We're gonna hold.
Yeah, I mean, I think I am letting it go, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I probably have the best hand right now, but what's it going to cost
me? The odds of us having the best hand by the end, and you're right, it's going to cost us a lot. We really have no true draws here. I'm not going to be excited if the trade or six falls. And that's really what we're shooting for. I mean, I guess, what do we have, some kind of weird straight draw, maybe?
Not really.
Back in our starting hand, 3-6-7. No, we don't. So, yeah, I mean, really, at this point, we're hoping... The best we can hope for is everybody misses all the way to the end, and our bottom two pair is good, which will be really bottom two pair by the time we get to the river, or that we boat up, and that somebody doesn't have a higher boat, which is always a dangerous... proposition. So,
and if we want to raise pot, the most you can make it is 98 cents, right? Because he bet 20 and there's 38 in the pot, so we would call that 20, it'd be 78, and 78 and 20 is 90. So we can only bet a dollar, and that's not going to get anybody out of this hand. If they raise and showed strength and bet again, you know, a dollar is not going to make this guy fold for, you know, 80 more cents. So you're just stuck at calling or folding, and calling just is losing poker. So I think I'm letting this go.
All right, well, our hero raises to 60 cents. The under gun calls, the button tanks, and then raises all in to $2.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, the under the gun would also be all in if he calls this. So, So essentially, if we call here, we're going to end the action.
Yeah. Well, for was it $2 or another $1.40?
About $1.40.
We're going to get a ton of money if we win this hand. Now you almost have to gamble and just call. I mean, how can you fold now for $1.40 when you don't have to worry about it being your whole stack?
Well, you know, and this is the point. One of the reasons I really like this hand is because I think it illustrates what folks are talking about. That to me, this is why I never played the 1 cent, 2 cent games, because I couldn't take them seriously. Because I'm exactly thinking the same thing. It's $1.40. Well, shoot, $1.40. I put $2 down to see whether we can get a triple crown. You know, astronomical odds. I'm gonna call $1.40 here at the bottom two pair. Who cares? And that's not the proper way to play this game. I mean, you need to be playing it as in bets. And you know, I like that our hero set it up like that. You know, here's how many bets I have, because then you're kind of taking the value off. But for me personally, I know if I'm playing this, I'm just going to splash around all night. I mean, I used to do that all the time, and $1.40, I feel like I'm Donald Trump. Here's $1.40, here's an extra 10 cents. Split it up. And that's a terrible way to play, I think. But in reality, $1.40 means nothing to me. I got bottom two pair. Sure, I'm going to call here.
Well, the other thing, though, is that if you're playing, if we made it real money and you made $1,000, that was how much you had in front of you.
Or even a $1, $2. I mean, that's what you're thinking about here. I mean, now, you know, it's going to cost me another $140. That's a big difference for me. I'm easily folding at that point.
Well, see, I don't know if I agree with, just because if I'm playing 1-2 and I have $1,000 in front of me, because that's what he has, if you essentially make it that way, and I put $60 out there, and I know I can't lose any more than 140 more, and I have two pair, I might call 140. If I'm playing the 1-2 game and I have $1,000 in front of me, then 140, those are just my tools for the trade, and I'm calling there. I don't think it's a bad mistake. If I know the action's closed and I'm getting like 6-1 of my money there, because you know the guy behind's going to call for 140, you know, or whatever the amount is, I feel like that if I'm doing it as the tools of trade, not using it as money, 140 is probably not a bad call there to end the action and maybe know you're ahead and dodge it. I don't like getting involved in this hand at all, and I probably would have folded it ages ago anyway. But now that I'm in and the action's over, and I can maybe get some serious money out of this hand for only a 140 more investment, even if I lose that 140, I'm still up a ton on my initial buy-in. You know, because I've lost what, $2.50 from 10, so I'd lose 250 out of 1,000, and I probably bought in for 200. So I think I might make that call no matter what level I'm at.
Interesting. Okay. well, Hero does make the call, and so does the under the gun. So everybody's all in. Now Hero says, I'm not overly stoked by my bottom two pair. That's a good feeling to have.
Yeah.
And he said he checked to see the under gun play pass. He says, whilst I'm not that content with my hand, I decided to raise half pot. What is going on here?
Oh, no. This is why we have live podcasting, for this exciting stuff. I'm filling the dead air while Scott tries to figure out what happened.
I think he's retelling the hand. So, all right. So, we'll retell the hand from his point of view, and then we'll reveal. That makes sense. All right. It says, not content with my hand, I decided to raise half pot to put both players to a decision. Both players are not showing significant strength, leaving my thoughts at this stage to be that they have either missed or are going to be on draws. When the other gun calls and the button tanks from it, deciding to push with almost $2, I think I'm more likely behind a trip jacks, which I totally agree with, but start to consider what the button would have to have with jack spade to be min raise. Men re-raise pre-flop, bet half the pot on flop, and then tank before pushing to being raised. Good point.
The end of the gun player, I have a feeling we're ahead of, because if he had a set or a top two or something like that, why wouldn't he have not bet to protect that hand at some point in that hand instead of just check calling all in? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Twice, really. Check call and then call all in. So I feel like that guy's behind. But the other guy, I don't know what he has. He could have the set of jacks. But
well, it does make a good point there that, I mean, it seems easy to think jacks, but then why think about it? I mean, at that point, if there's a lot of raising going on, just get it all in now.
It feels like ace, jack of diamonds, to be honest with you. It feels like he has ace, diamonds, jack of diamonds in his hand.
That's a good read, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so while he was thinking what to do here, he counted the pot at 358, began to replay the hand. He said, given the looseness of the players, I figured there's a decent chance that Button might have made this play with an ace-high flush draw, and that the under-the-gun player will commit their last $1.40, at least 90% of the time. Why else would they have called my raise? I think that's what we say. We're already counting on that money being in.
Right. Right.
With a hand that's behind and on a draw. So I believe that I should probably fold, but decide to call on the basis that I might be getting the implied odds to call from the under the gun, and subsequently the under gun does call out with him too.
Yeah, it's not necessarily, it's not exactly 6-1, it's less than that, but it's a pretty good amount of money on your hand that you only have to be right, you know. I mean, let's just say it is exactly what he thinks, that he's up against a draw on ace-jack. You know what I mean? And even if he's up against aces, he's still got two pair just to
That's a flyer here.
So yeah. It seems like the under-the-gun guy has aces, and it seems like the other guy might have ace-jack of diamonds in those hands.
All right, well, the Button has a queen-high diamond flush and 4-5 for a straight draw.
Okay, so he's got queen-high draw for a flush, and he's got 4-5 in his hand for open-ended.
So he's got a lot of outs, but certainly not...
No hand yet, though.
I thought, yeah.
Okay.
Under the gun is called a pair of sixes and 4-5 for the same straight draw.
Wait, oh, under the gun has that hand? I thought the other guy was under the gun. Okay, so the guy that shoved was the guy with the 4-5 and the queen-high flush draw.
That's correct.
Okay, so they have... Wow, so we're ahead, then.
We are ahead. The turn comes to 10 of diamonds...
Oh, well.
The Button makes his flush. The river is a 6 of clubs.
Yes.
Give me a boat. And a very angry Button.
Yeah, I think it's worth... I really feel like it's worth it with the implied of the under-the-gun calling there. And you know, even if he was wrong, he loses a little more than $2 from his $10 stack. And if he started with $2, that's not that big of a deal. And he look at the payoff now. Now he's won $7 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it does illustrate a couple points. I mean, one, we always talk about when people ask, how much should I buy in for? And I always like to buy in, not light, but I'm not necessarily buying for the maximum. But a lot of people will tell you to buy in for the maximum, and this is the case here because, you know, we normally would not have stayed in his hand with bottom two. But as you said, we calculated and decided that there's no more action, so we don't have to worry about more bets on the turn in the river. So that makes it easier for us to call with these, you know, kind of reckless hands.
Yeah.
You know, if that one of the other players had a bigger stack than us, then we're not in there.
Right.
Because we're afraid that we're going to have to put more in on a weak hand. So.
Right. If that guy could somehow, when he bet pot again, made it 8 to go, well, we're probably letting that hand go faster than, you know, a cat with his tail on fire. So I think that the...
You're so folksy.
The stacks dictate our call there, and you know, and if you were wrong, you had two pair, and you move on, and whatever. But if it was a big, big, big hand, and you could lose your whole stack, you wouldn't even be playing that hand. You know, you would have folded a preflop, which I still would have done, regardless of winning this hand.
All right, Matt, we bring that in. We are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Folks don't have to have the hand of the week to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to send us your hands of the week to podcast@anyupmagazine.com.
Don't forget, next week's our Vegas show. Tune in to see what hijinks Scott and I get into. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.